Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by the one and only Planetary Society. Co-founded by Carl Sagan and led today by Bill Nye, the Planetary Society is a global nonprofit that exists for anyone to take a role in advancing space exploration. When you become a member, you join their mission to explore worlds, find life off Earth, and protect our planet from dangerous asteroids. Anyone can join. Find your place in space and become a member today at planetary.org/radiolab.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab. This hour,
words.
Power of words.
So once words enter your head, once they tickle in there, and we just explained how that happens.
Sort of.
Then they, you know, they're always there.
Like but what if they're not? What would happen if that throng that is in your head? What if all of that stuff, whatever is in your head, suddenly went, got yanked right out of your head? What would be left?
Well, this got us thinking about a very famous talk at one of the TED conferences.
I grew up to study the brain.
A talk given by a neuroanatomist named Jill Bolte. Is it Bolte or Bolt?
Bolte?
Bolte Taylor.
Yeah.
And all you really need to know is that one morning in December of 1996, Dr. Taylor woke up and she had a headache.
I woke up to a pounding pain behind my left eye. And it was the kind of pain, caustic pain, that you get when you bite into ice cream. And it just gripped me. And then it released me. And it was very unusual for me to ever experience any kind of pain. So I thought, okay, I'll just start my normal routine. So I got up and I jumped onto my CardioGlider, which is a full body, full exercise machine. And I'm jamming away on this thing. And I'm realizing that my hands look like primitive claws grasping onto the bar. And I thought, whoa, I'm a weird-looking thing. So I get off the machine, and I'm standing in my bathroom getting ready to step into the shower. And then I lost my balance, and I'm propped up against the wall. And I'm asking myself, what is wrong with me? What is going on? And in that moment, my right arm went totally paralyzed by my side.
In fact, a blood vessel in the left hemisphere of Jill's brain had popped. And that part of her brain was starting to shut down.
And it was the shutdown that really caught our attention.
In that moment, my brain chatter went totally silent. Just like someone took a remote control and pushed the mute button. So here I am in this space, and my job and any stress related to my job, it was gone. And I felt lighter in my body. And then all of a sudden, my left hemisphere comes back online, and it says to me, hey, I'm having a stroke. We got to get some help. And I'm going, oh, I got a problem. I got a problem. So it's like, okay, I got a problem. But then I immediately drifted right back out. And I affectionately refer to this space as La La Land. But it was.
So I'm just watching my brain become more and more incapable of functioning.
That is Jill Bolte Taylor herself.
Hi, Robert.
We actually got her into a studio.
Hello, Jad.
Hello. Because we wanted to ask her some questions about that moment when her inner voices went away.
So let's talk about brain chatter for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
In the story that we've told so far, you're still asking yourself questions. Yeah. Now, did that stop?
It on the morning of the stroke, I was doing this wafting dance between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere. So language would come back on. But once I got to the emergency room and I passed out, when I woke later that afternoon, I had absolutely no language.
Did you know your name?
No.
Did you know your address?
No.
Did you know about your summer from 1983?
No.
You know, like, my mom is so-and-so?
I didn't know any of that.
None of it.
I didn't know any of that.
Just imagine, she's lying in her bed, her head is shaved, wrapped in bandages, she's had hours of brain surgery, she's got tubes coming out of her mouth, out of her nose, she's lost her career, she's lost her language.
I lost all my memories.
And yet, she says, sitting there in that suddenly wordless space.
I had found a peace inside of myself that I had not known before. I had pure silence inside of my mind. Pure silence.
Pure silence?
Pure silence.
What was...
You know, not that little voice that you know, you wake up in the morning and the first thing your brain says is, oh, man, the sun is shining. Well, imagine that you don't hear that little voice saying, man, the sun is shining. You just experience the sun and the shining.
Is this the absence of reflection of any kind?
Yeah.
Is it just sensual intake and period?
That is exactly what it was. It was all of the present moment.
Did you have thoughts?
I had joy. I just had joy. I had this magnificent experience of I'm this collection of these beautiful cells. I'm organic. I'm this organic entity.
Did you have a deadhead period by any chance?
You know, I missed that by a few years.
Oh.
But I get a lot of that.
And the other thing that she told us is that lying in that bed without words, she says she felt connected to things, to everything, in a way that she never had before.
Oh, yeah. I lost all definition of myself in relationship to everything in the external world.
You mean like you couldn't figure out where you ended?
Mm-hmm.
How much of that was about language? A little part? A lot? I mean...
Oh, I would say it was huge. Language is an ongoing information processing. It's the constant reminder. I am. This is my name. This is all the data related to me. These are my likes and my dislikes. These are my beliefs. I am an individual. I am a single. I'm a solid. I'm separate from you. This is
now, as fruity as this may sound to pin all this on language, we have run into this idea before. A couple seasons ago, Paul Brox, remember him?
Yeah, sure.
Neuropsychologist.
If you want to ask me about myself,
he told me that there is a theory out there, which he believes, actually, that all a person is in the end, like all the personhood of a person, the I or the you of a person, all that is in the end is a
story.
A story you tell yourself.
What we normally think of when we think about ourselves is really a story. It's the story of what's happened to that body over time.
I did not have that portion of my language center that tells a story. Curious little Jill. Me, Jill Bolte Taylor, climbing the Harvard ladder. Through language. Loves dissection, cutting up things. That language was gone. I got to essentially become an infant. Again.
I mean, this is the problem here.
What do you mean?
When you drop out of the I-ness of yourself or the story of yourself, then you are left, she says, at peace. I could argue that that's just stranded. That's stranded in the sunshine, with the wind, in the now.
But, I mean, it's not like she stayed there.
Well, that's true.
I mean, we wouldn't be a dog to her if she had. And as she started to recover, she ran into something kind of interesting, which sounded to me sort of like what maybe the rats and the babies go through in the white room. She would have these disparate thoughts and then stall out, like she couldn't bring them together.
Yeah. When people would speak to me, I remembered in pictures. So if somebody would ask me, who's the president of the United States of America, this is a huge question. So for the next several hours, I'd be pondering, president, president. President. What's a president?
President.
And then I would get a picture in my mind of a president as a leader.
Was it a picture of a specific guy?
It still flashes into my mind. It's a picture of a silhouette of a male.
A presidential profile.
Like maybe the idea of a president, basically.
Yeah.
So that was her president.
And then I had to figure out a United States. And so, you know, eventually I come up with this map in my mind, this picture of the United States. And
like a line drawing. So now she's got this map, she's got this silhouette of a guy.
There have been a
And she said, after hours.
President, United States. And it's like, oh, my God.
She still couldn't somehow bring him together.
Yeah.
I didn't have the road that I had to travel in order to come up with, I think it was Clinton at the time. Yeah, it was Clinton at the time.
Now, as Jill starts to get better.
This is after 8 years of hard work and recovery. And
finally, the words start to trickle back.
And when they did, she says, that silence that she loved so much got pushed out.
That was one of the sacrifices. For me, that was one of the sacrifices.
Well.
Well.
We're doing a language show here, and you're the anti-queen of our language show. You're like saying, who needs it? What
no,
the hell?
No. No, but what I am saying is that in order for us to communicate with language, we pull ourselves away from a different kind of experience. I do believe that there are times when you need to let your brain chatter be quiet.
But is it fair to say, please agree or disagree with this statement, I think that words and language and grammar are necessary, but not half as good as wind in my hair, a smell in my nose, and that old right brain sensual immediacy.
Yeah. You know, if I had to choose, which is essentially what you're saying, if I had to choose, that would be a really, really, really tough decision.
Jill Bolte Taylor is the author of, what's it called? The book?
My Stroke of Insight.
Yes. Check our website, radiolab.org, for any details. And if you subscribe to our podcast, there is a bonus video that goes along with this hour, and it's pretty great.
This is a voice message from Professor Jim Shapiro. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation.
Helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Committed to building a more just, verdant, and
peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And
the George
Lucas Educational Foundation, providing schools that work.
Strategies for 21st century success.
Learn more at edutopia.org.
This is NPR.